There was a time on the Delmarva Peninsula when passenger trains took people up and down the spine of the first state. In this month's History Matters, our Megan Pauley tells us the history of this passenger railroading, preserved through the volunteer-run Weekend Heritage Railroad, the Wilmington and Western Railroad, which celebrates its 50th anniversary of operation this year.
Railroads have played a key role in the nation's transportation history, and Delaware is no exception. Starting service in the late 1800s, they connected small inland towns to big cities like Wilmington and Philadelphia for work and play.
My mother was born during the Depression, so there was not a lot of things that people could afford to do. So to take a trip to Wilmington on the train must have been very accessible to people that didn't have a lot of money.
That's Patty Downs. I caught up with her along Route 13 in Dover. The sounds of cars along the highway stand in stark contrast to the sounds of the railroad. As a young girl, her mother traveled frequently from Ridgely, Maryland to visit her aunt, who was living in Wilmington and working for DuPont.
They would go up for the day and have lunch, spend the day shopping, get back on the train, and then come back home again.
While passenger service ended in the 1930s, Delawareans and other visitors can still take a ride on the same historic railway that Patty's mom rode over 100 years ago. It's called the Wilmington and Western Railroad, just one of a few historic train networks preserved across the country. And it's run almost solely by dedicated volunteers who've stuck with the railroad for decades.
Oh my goodness, at least 30, 35 years.
That's Dottie Spencer, who's volunteered with her husband Bob since 1978.
A friend nudged us, told us about it, and Bob's family's been in railroading for a long time, and the bug bit.
Four of Bob's uncles worked for railroads. He helped one of his uncles shovel coal into a locomotive as a child, and the passion for railroads stayed with him.
It gets in your blood.
Bob and Dottie aren't the only ones who share this passion. Robert Elwood has been volunteering with the Wilmington and Western since the late 80s. His grandfather worked as an engineer on the B&O, Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. As a teenager, his grandfather began firing steam engines and worked his way up to an engineer. Elwood is so passionate that he's detailed the technical aspects of significant events of the railroad's history in a 252-page timeline. In our interview, we only touched on a few key points, like the impetus for the beginning of the railroad, a booming mill industry in Wilmington.
You had the first rolling mill in the state of Delaware, the second one in the country at Wooddale. The Marshall family that is in York, Lynn, and founded the Vulcanized Fiber Company also had the rolling mills, and that's why it's called Marshallton. It's another branch of that same Marshall family.
The railroad was also required to build hotels at the different stops, catering to passengers either just passing through or traveling long distances. And while the Red Clay Valley was ripe for new industries, there were also barriers to building the railroad.
They really didn't understand geology a lot back then, and Delaware's got a lot of rock in it. It's the foothills of the Appalachians, so their construction costs went skyrocketed.
Aside from the geological constraints, there were financial concerns as well. And when the 1920s brought the rise of the automobile, the train stopped its passenger service not long after. The railroads were left to rely on the transportation of cargo, including poultry.
The 20s and 30s, poultry was shipped live because they didn't have the ability to freeze it. So the guy had invented something called a chicken car. It had crates in it, and you'd have turkeys in it and chickens and different things like that.
Volunteer Len Beck gave me a tour of the car, still part of the Wilmington and Western's tourist train.
Yeah, this was the Pensy commuter car.
Okay.
And you can see we took two-thirds of the window posts out and made it an open car. You want to look in?
Sure.
Beck remembers taking trips with his father via train to the shore during the war when gas was rationed.
Back in the 30s and early 40s, I mean, trains were still paramount as far as transportation and so forth.
But when the Long Depression occurred, around 60 railroads across the country went out of business in a period of only 2 years, and many mergers took place. The Wilmington and Western went bankrupt and was reorganized as the Delaware Western. The B&O purchased the railroad and operated it for many years.
The B&O and the Pennsylvania Railroad both recognized that the future in railroading is to connect Richmond, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, Boston together.
The railroad started to lay the foundation for today's Amtrak lines, which were created through the Rail Passenger Service Act passed by Nixon in 1970. Amtrak started with 20 railroads participating, with the first, the Clocker, beginning service from Philadelphia to New York in 1971. The Delaware Western was sold again, and this time to the historic Red Clay Valley, the group charged with running a tourist service on the historic Wilmington and Western. The Heritage Railroad is kept alive by train buffs like Tom Marshall, who helped secure the funding and support to purchase the railroad.
I had always wanted personally to be able to run a steam locomotive. And you don't often have to start a railroad in order to do that, but there weren't any steam locomotives left in regular service in our area anyway.
But it took years for Marshall and others to get permission to operate it.
The hardest job I ever had was to sell the unions, the local union people, that it was okay to do it. There was no precedent for volunteers operating trains on a Class 1 railroad, which the B&O was.
He finally got approval by the train unions in 1965 when they signed a contract allowing the Heritage Railroad to operate from Marshallton to Mount Cuba.
There was a lot of relief that we finally owned the railroad and that track maintenance had become problematic and they had lost operating weekends because of track issues and all. Well, the idea was, hey, now we own the track, that problem will go away. I think what they didn't realize was the FRA at the time was working with all the nation's railroads, and there was a lot of deferred maintenance and everything going on with the line. And once it changed hands, the FRA said, now we're going to clean this up. So every time the FRA inspectors would come, there would be a list of, we're not going to shut you down, but you need to attend to these things. And we'll be back in 6 months for our next inspection, and we expect this list to be done or we're going to shut you down. So you were running from 6 month to 6 month, basically fixing deferred maintenance items that the B&O hadn't done, which was a very big expense.
That's Elwood again. He says the 1990s were smooth years for the railroad until Hurricane Floyd came through in 1999, and took out most of the line.
But wood floats, and when those creeks rise, all that wood starts to float.
They secured FEMA money, which helped save the railroad. Two trestles were built and reinforced by drilling them down into the bedrock using steel instead of wood. But then Hurricane Henry came in 2003 and washed out all of the trestles except the two steel ones built in the wake of Floyd.
Didn't rain in Newark, but it rained in the Red Clay Valley. It rained in the Red Clay Valley.
That's David Ludlow, executive director of the historic Red Clay Valley, who has played an instrumental role in the maintenance of the railroad. He's been involved in the railroad for over 25 years, starting out as a volunteer himself.
We've come a long way. We've built buildings. We've built, rebuilt from two catastrophic floods. We've built the stations. We've built platforms. We've restored steam locomotives. We've restored diesel locomotives.
One of his favorite moments, driving the Golden Spike, a common tradition to mark significant events in railroading, when the Wilmington and Western celebrated its reopening after it was closed due to flooding.
Think of this beautiful Golden Spike up there. You've got a spike maul in your hand, and you've got several hundred people standing and watching. Don't miss. Don't miss, because it's real embarrassing when you do. So you take an extra long stance, and you really focus on it, and you don't try to drive the thing home in one hit. You drive it very carefully.
Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride?
Ludlow often got free passes to ride from Wilmington to Louisville to visit his grandparents. His grandparents worked for railroads in Louisville, Nashville, and Illinois as engineers.
So I guess the seed didn't fall too far from the tree.
Ludlow says the holidays are important moneymakers for the railroad, especially Easter and Christmas.
The interests of your ridership. Mom and Dad will come and ride my train, yes, but they're coming with their children. And they want the children to experience the joy of riding on an antique train being pulled by a steam locomotive. Now you put the Easter Bunny on there, and he's going to come through and pass out chocolate bunnies to all the kids and talk to them. That's a little different. Now you put Santa Claus on, and you have Mrs. Claus on, and you've got a couple of elves as helpers. Wow, you can sell some tickets on Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is so important to the experience that the railroad joined the Real Bearded Santa Society of America.
And we actually have real bearded Santas that are professionally trained, that actually have, years of experience. They have training. They know what to do. They have very elaborate clothing and costume. So our real Santa is not just a guy that's, you know, one of our volunteers that we put in a red coat that's got a little bit of soot on it.
While the train now operates only a regular weekend schedule, it can be chartered for special events like weddings and family gatherings. Keeping it from operating in the red is hard work, but Ludlow isn't about to give up.
It's been a very, very rewarding experience. People have said if you love your job, you never work a day in your life. I've been very fortunate.
Megan Polly, Delaware Public Media. I'd wave to the brakeman, and he'd wave back at me.